You cannot think it more conspicuous when you read the opening verses of our text from the Gospel of Luke, that we would see a convergence with the very things that we are dealing with in our world right now. There's no huge jump that needs to be made. Just open the newspaper. Just click on your opening page on your screen of your computer, on the news stories, or check it on your BlackBerry. Look around, look up, watch, and it's right there. This morning's Ottawa Citizen: Canada strikes a deal on climate fund. 53 countries at the Commonwealth Leaders Summit have agreed to fund a fast start program to help developing nations deal with the effects of climate change, the rise of water levels. Then you continue the story inside. Who's to blame for ClimateGate? A hacker hacked into the emails of Philip Jones from Norwich, which is part of the monitoring of the ocean temperatures. And there seems to be some questionable things there, throwing doubt perhaps on whether this is a serious issue, this climate change, or not, but others are casting that aside. And then these two interesting paragraphs from the article. Next month's Copenhagen conference has been billed as the last chance for world leaders to prevent an irreversible change to the planet's climate, unless they can reach a binding agreement on reducing global emissions. Humanity could face a bleak future, according to the majority of the scientific community. And there will be signs in sun and moon and stars, and upon the earth distress of nations in perplexity at the roaring of the sea and the waves. Freaky. Well, it's not only in this morning's paper. This month and very recently, we have recognized and observed huge catastrophe, huge tumult in our world. Recently observed the first anniversary of the Mumbai attack that took place last year. Next week, we're going to observe the 20th anniversary of the massacre, the École Polytechnique in Montreal. This week, we observe World AIDS Day. This month, the coming month in December, Human Rights Sunday and Human Rights Day. If you look in your worship bulletin at the back that we usually include each week, the church and the world, there are concerns that are right there in our face. Church group urges treatment access for children with HIV. Congregations remember children in care in Canada. Issues around poverty, child poverty in other words. Massacre in the Philippines. Faith leaders want private armies disarmed. The UN looks to faith leaders to help to end violence against women. It's all there. This is not some kind of spooky prediction. This has to do with recognizing with vigilance and with attentiveness what is going on in our world as a way of helping to make sense of it, to deal with it, to engage it. And this is not even to mention the tumult and the roaring of the seas and the earthquakes going on in our own lives, in our hearts, in our relationships, in our economic life. There is uproar, upheaval, challenges and difficulties abound. When we come to our text, the language that is used by the gospel writer, the apocalyptic language, is meant to stir hope. Now you may say, how does that figure? Well, we have to understand the genre of literature. Apocalyptic literature was pressed into service when the people of that community who produced it understood their lives to be imminently imperiled, living under huge oppression, under the power and underfoot of empire, foresaw a time when it would not be such, when God would make it right. And so in this particular text, we have a tension, both this and the Jeremiah text, between looking to the future, when God will end all injustice and end all poverty, as foretold in Revelation. As foretold, in a sense, foretold, I should say, in the prophet Jeremiah. So we have a tension between looking to that time and also the present reality of reading the signs. In this text, there's an invitation to be watchful for signs. And we're given a key on how to do that. Although it looks like it's the heavenly bodies being referred to, the sun and the moon and the stars, it is true, but what is also true is the symbol of those things. For you see, Rome was in charge in the time of writing, heavily in charge. Their empire was vast. But what you may not know or may need to be reminded of is that Rome's symbol was the sun. And the stars and the moon represented their client kings that they had installed all around their empire. So you see, the writer is not unaware of the profound trajectories in which his message is being told. There are political implications. There are implications for liberation from oppression as well as religious and apocalyptic. So we are invited in ourselves to look at the signs of the times today to see what coded language is necessary for us to perceive what is happening. And to say, how can we allow the tension of the future and of the present to live together? You see, this is the first Sunday of Advent, and in a sense it begins with the end. It begins with a vision of God's desire to bring to culmination the dream that God has for humanity. But that is meant indeed to stir us to live in the present, not to abandon and to paralysis or non-interest our life in the present and wait on some mountain for this heavenly rescue. It is to allow us to be energized and challenged. Michael Lerner wrote a book a few years ago called The Politics of Change. The Politics of Meaning, sorry. And in it, he makes the case that most of us abandon what are our precious values of care and compassion and justice and love for one another because it seems so impractical, so out of touch with the reality we live. And therefore, we capitulate to other values of selfishness and materialism. This is an invitation to hope in the midst of our everyday life. I want to refer you, and some of you may know it, and if you don't, look it up, Google it, or check through some of your art albums. Van Gogh's Starry Night. Some of you may be able to picture that in your mind, a beautiful painting. It may seem troublesome, but people interpret it differently. You can't see it from there, but I'll just kind of show you a little image. There are swirling heavenly bodies. The moon is yellow and the stars are bright around it. The sky is foreboding. And this sky is pictured over a quiet, stilled hamlet. Central in the painting is the spire of the church. Some people look at this and think it is frightening. Others look at it and see it as an artistic way of inviting us into the mystery of what is going on. Others see God's presence and glimpse that in it. So when we see these signs that Jesus describes, he says the response is going to be different. Some are going to be terrified. And rather than checking with Homeland Security or the CIA or CSIS to find out what threat is really at our door, invites us to pray. To pray. To discern where God is at work and what is going on. that I find particularly interesting is the way in which Luke is inviting his readers to pay attention both to the end and the present. For Jesus tells them a story, a parable about everyday life, about things you and I can relate to. When you see the leaves change, you know the summer is coming. Now, the snow is not on the ground yet here in Ottawa, but it's coming. Sad to say for some, happy for others if they're skiers and so on. See, people look at signs and they respond differently. The invitation when this ominous time is upon us is to respond by waiting on hope. And here's an invitation that I want to suggest to you, a nuanced way of waiting on hope. There are ways of waiting, like waiting for a bus, waiting in line to get tickets, or to check out in the grocery store. But there's another kind of waiting. There is an active waiting. There's an engaged waiting. There's a relational waiting. When you go to sit in a restaurant, you are waited upon. But you're not waited upon in the same way as waiting for a bus. That kind of waiting is an act of service. Hopefully it's good service, not always. Tragically. In fact, I was at a function last night and sitting at a table with a couple of people complaining of a restaurant they went to. How terrible the service was. Had to wait 40 minutes for someone to come take their order. I'm not talking about that kind of waiting. I'm talking about the kind of waiting on you as a customer, as it were, that is attentive, that is helpful, that is serving, that is vigilant. This kind of waiting on hope recognizes that hope is not as elusive as optimism. Hope is concrete, and yet it is that which has the future gravitational pull to pull us forward. When we wait on hope, we serve the purposes that build hope. And how do we build hope? The vision of God expressed through Jesus' life and ways are that hope is built when we attend to the ways of God, when we attend to the care for creation, the love in relationships, the repair that comes through forgiveness, the confession, the helpfulness and the vigilance and resolve to overcome our fear and our apathy to actually get involved in unpopular causes that actually serve the cause of hope. That kind of waiting propels us with the community of faith with a certain momentum to begin changing ourselves and others and society. Wait on hope. Wait with that kind of generosity, with that kind of fervor, with that kind of commitment. Some of you are familiar with the story of Martin the Cobbler, an animated little short story that often comes on around Christmas time. It's a story written in 1885 by Leo Tolstoy, originally called Where Love Is, God Is. And just to remind you, the story is about a cobbler, Martin, who has experienced profound tragedy, whose life, whose personal sun and stars and moon has been turned upside down. The rivers and the waves of his experience are absolutely in tumult. His wife has died. And the little son, as he is committed now to raise that son, after a while grows ill and dies also. He feels his life is over. He has nothing to live for. He is retreated from his profession as a cobbler, sunk into despair, dissipation. The cares of this life have taken over his heart. Until one day a friend comes and visits him and talks with him and listens to him, and he pours his soul out to his friend. And the friend invites him to read the Gospels, read a little bit of the Gospels every day, that it would encourage him and bless him. And so he takes that advice, and he pulls down the Gospels each night, and he reads a little bit. Started out only on Sundays, but then it began to draw him in, and it was every day. And he felt one day that a voice spoke to him and said, "Be ready, watch for me, I'm coming to visit you today." And he interpreted that as the Lord himself. And so that day he was particularly vigilant as he returned to his cobbling. And he looked out his window, a basement window. He could see people pass by and he could tell, because in that village there wasn't a pair of shoes he hadn't worked on, who it was that went by. There appeared a pair of boots outside his window. And he was hoping that that person who was staying too long would soon move so they wouldn't distract him from seeing when the Lord came. It turned out to be a soldier, Stephen. And finally, Martin went out to him and figured that maybe he wasn't well, or perhaps he was hungry, and offered him something to eat and invited him in. And they sat down and had tea and spoke with him. He hadn't eaten in 2 days. And Martin the cobbler offered him the generosity of love and hospitality. And when he left to protect him against the cold wind, gave him an extra cloak. And when he left, the evening had come, and he thought the Lord had not visited. But as he read the Gospels, he fell upon that verse from Matthew. I was hungry, and you fed me. And he realized that in his care and love, in waiting on the hope of the Lord's visit, by waiting and serving Stephen, he had experienced that love. He had experienced a response, a healing response to the tumult of his personal sun and moon and stars having been in upheaval. There is work for us to do on a personal, relational level, in ourselves, between each other, and in the world. The tension of this story, both when God will come in Jesus Christ in a profound way. And I like how British scholar, New Testament scholar, Tom Wright states this. Sometimes we think of it when we use the word second coming of Jesus. That's, you know, for moderate Christians and so kind of have a little skittishness about that. But he wants to rephrase that, and I like it because it makes us think that somehow Jesus has gone away. And he suggests that we really rephrase that by talking about Jesus' re-veiling, or revealing as it were, or return in a different way. Not a return as coming again, as having departed, but that this Jesus is being unveiled again. Because the Spirit of Christ is with us all along. That's why I used to like that little bracelet. The little, you remember, WWJD. Anybody knows what that stands for? Anybody know a little bracelet people would wear? What would Jesus do? Or not do? Now, I don't want to diss that. I know it's very important to some people. But I've stopped focusing on those letters because it makes an assumption that what Jesus has done and the ways of Jesus have been fixed in history, and we just have to figure it out and do it on our own. I rather prefer W-I-J-D. What is Jesus doing? Because Jesus continues in the Spirit of Christ and the Spirit of God to work in and amongst us. We need to discern that and join it. And so when we speak of Advent, we're speaking of a new unveiling indeed of that Spirit that is already here that we can fully see. And it will spur us on not only to engage our own spiritual lives and our relationships, but to build a momentum and energy to confront the reality of our world. Some of you are familiar with the Star Wars saga. This is a very interesting analogy. If you don't know it, you can Google it and have a look. But Star Wars, the language of empire is very prevalent. And in one of the episodes, the empire's major form of enforcement is something called the Death Star. And the Death Star is an ultimate weapon that has the capacity to destroy entire planets. And all of the planet colonies live in fear of the Empire because of this Death Star that can move through the galaxy, destroying rebellious and disobedient nations who do not do the will of the Empire. It requires the ingenuity, the commitment of a joint force of unlikely souls to destroy this Death Star. There are representations of the Death Star in our world, of violence and injustice and of poverty, of countries with the military might to enforce their will. It requires a cobbling together of those who are prepared to wait on hope, to move into scenarios and movements and actions that undermine the influence of oppression. Advent is profound, and it invites us to respond. It may not be what we are prepared to do leading up to Christmas. But you see, the sight and the vision of Advent goes beyond Christmas into our lifestyle and our world. For it will come upon all who dwell upon the face of the whole earth, but watch at all times, praying that you may have the strength. We come together in worship to have the strength to support each other in our personal storms and tumult, to encourage and exhort each other in our relationship building and life and loving, to mobilize ourselves as a congregation as we seek to bless this neighborhood and this city, and to join our prayers and our energies and our gifts of money and otherwise to impact the world for good. It begins with an end, because the end is that which we see God calling us to. The end that Luke anticipates and Jesus anticipates is the end to suffering, the end to injustice, the end to unloving, the end to pain, the end to those things that work against humanity. If we know that is the dream of God, then as we wait on hope, that is how we give our lives daily. Amen.